Yeah. There he is. He is 74 years old today. Kenny Rogers. That's, you know, every time a person gets older and you remember them when you were like 18 or 19, it seems like that shouldn't have happened. Now, with me in the studio is a person who never gets older. I was shocked when I knew Phyllis Diller was still alive, but I did not know she was 95 years old.
I know. And, you know, when I saw that headline yesterday afternoon, I remarked here in the office, I said, oh, Phyllis Diller died. And I was greeted with just blank stares.
Yes, right. Okay. because you have the 20 and 30 year olds.
Those under 30, they had no idea.
They wouldn't know. and actually, in her own way, well, actually not in her own way, in reality, she was a pioneer.
Oh, absolutely.
She was a stand-up comic when women, when not only couldn't get in to be a stand-up comedy, it wasn't considered very tasteful, was it?
Well, yes, and she was really rather raunchy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, yeah, so she kind of paved the way for people like Joan Rivers.
I think if most people understood what went on here up in the Catskills, that wasn't church humor.
Yeah, so true, so true.
Most of the comedians that we see, that you see on film from the 50s, when you see them on the Ed Sullivan Show, they're nice and cute, but when they were up here in the Catskill,
yeah, down and dirty.
That was some triple X comedy. Lynn Sloniker is in the house. Going to bring us up to date. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, actually, there's some school news. Things are revving up for the beginning of the school year. I think most districts in both counties start the week after Labor Day, which is quickly approaching.
Quickly approaching. Today is the 21st.
Yeah, I don't know where the summer went, much less July itself. So I don't know. But there have been a couple of stories recently that are kind of interesting. The Chatham story. About closing their middle school. I don't know. You live out there. I don't know if you've heard any of these.
And I hadn't heard anything about that.
Well, they, you know, Chatham continues to impress with the way they study and they think and then they act. And in this case, they commissioned a study by BOCES, and it was completed in June, and I guess the superintendent just recently reported out the findings. They determined that they could save $700,000 off the bat by closing that building. It's the middle school. People are familiar with Chatham. It's the older school that sits right there it's really at the center of the village, right near the library.
Yes, right.
Surrounded by all the fields where the kids run and play. But I guess, and they emphasized in discussing this plan that there isn't any rush to judgment here. They have some time to make this decision, but I guess the plan would call for sixth grade going back down to the elementary school, and then 7 and 8 would merge at the high school, with the caveat that they would have to build some addition to the high school to accommodate the two additional grades.
You're right. You'll have the 7 and 8 year olds in there with the high school kids.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. They did point out that there is a declining population. They're continuing to graduate somewhere around 100 to 120 kids every year, but each incoming class of kindergartners is much smaller, only 60 to 70 kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they said maybe if they do decide to do this merge, that maybe the first couple of years will be a little tight. But after that, they'll have more than enough space at the high school.
Now, you could fool me, because I tell you, if you go, when you get into Chatham on a on an afternoon, it looks like children's town. But I mean, I guess that's how it appears when I'm downtown. There's kids all over the place.
Well, that's true,
that's surprising.
Yeah, and a lot of that though does have to do with the location of the school, because the school is right there, the library is right there. So when kids are out, it's sort of like being over on State Street at 2:45 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon in Hudson.
Right.
It's like it's Kid City.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. That's true. The high school, the campus is right there, and they all march through downtown.
Right. Going to the library, going home, whatever it is they're doing. So Yeah, so this will be something to watch. They said that the one downside to this plan, well, I think there would be two. I mean, for one, you do have all of the fields and the gym connected to the middle school. I know that that's where the soccer teams play, varsity as well as, you know, middle school or modified. So they'd have to accommodate for that. And the other thing, too, from the perspective of the village, to have that building empty. That's a huge empty structure in the middle of town. So.
Right. Fortunately, it can't actually be seen from town, but you just hate those eyesores. There's a bunch of them up here on 66.
Oh well, that's the problem here in Greenport with the former elementary school here in Hudson. That's really become an eyesore, and also it's a magnet for bad behavior.
Just sits there like a hunk of wood.
But for people in Chatham, if they want to continue in this conversation to hear more about this, there is a meeting 6:30 September 11th to continue discussing this proposal or this idea. So.
Oh, okay, because that's what I was getting ready to ask you, because it occurred to me, isn't that the type of thing that goes up for a vote? Or is that a decision that can be made unilaterally?
No, absolutely. It would have to go up for referendum. Uh-huh. Not so much the reapportioning or the redistribution of the kids, but what they would eventually do with the building. And I think what's really up for discussion is, you could save close to $700,000 by closing this building, but what will you have to spend to make the accommodations to move those students? And then you get into this discussion about what do you do with the building, because you don't want to have to forever mothball it. Here again, I mean, the Greenport example in Hudson is a good one. That costs a huge amount of money every year for the district. It just sits there, so.
Yeah, I know it appears to people when there's an empty building, but a lot of people, what people don't understand is it still has to be maintained.
Absolutely.
So it becomes, what do they say, the white elephant.
Yeah, exactly. And another story, I won't go into all the details of it, but I just wanted to point it out, to Connick Hill's transportation story by John Mason. It ran August 19th in the Register Star. It's a really good view of the budgeting behind transportation. And yeah, maybe it's a little wonky and a little inside baseball, but it's kind of, I think, for the community to know what it takes to transport kids in a rural district like Taconic Hills. He points out that Taconic Hills ranks 29th among 697 districts in the state in terms of square miles. So it's a large, very large district, square wide, acreage wise.
Mm-hmm.
And their population density per square mile is only 8 students. So that means that you have to cart all those kids around.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
They're in this conversation about what it costs to maintain each one of those routes to go out and pick up the kids. And the numbers that he shows, for instance, one route costs $137,000 for the district to do. Yeah. But if a contractor comes in, it's closer to $66,000 to $70,000 per route.
So decisions have to be made.
Yeah, so they have sort of a mix of approaches out there. But I recommend it to anybody who wants to sort of have a window on that aspect of budgeting and school management.
All right, I have to take a minute to tell our audience that it is now 10 o'clock. You are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. Of Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, New York. And the person you're listening to is station manager and blogger extraordinaire, Lynn Slonica. And Lynn is bringing us up to date, as usual, on the education jazz. Go ahead. I'm sorry, I had to be official.
Hey.
There's an FCC guy that patrols.
I know. I can feel his breath on my neck.
That's right. If you don't do it, they come up to the studio and turn the microphone.
That's right. And I guess the other thing is Catskill, lunches, the price of lunches are going up.
Oh, my.
Nothing is safe from inflation. But this is one of those weird things. I've never really fully understood the lunch program. You know, it's a federally subsidized program. But basically, the price of lunch this year, this coming, you know, September, is going up to, it's going up a nickel to $1.55 for an elementary lunch and $1.80 for middle school and high school. And one of the reasons, well, the primary reason why the prices are going up is because it's some technical bureaucratic thing that because their price falls below the federal reimbursement rate of $2.51, they're mandated to increase it by a nickel. And I guess as long as they're under that minimum for their lunch price, they will continue to raise it 5 cents every year.
Ah, okay.
So
that's still not bad. What is it?
It's for high school. It's $1.80.
Oh, that's not bad.
Well, it's not bad, but when you consider the food that you get for $1.80, I know for high school, especially boys, they they need to eat about two or three of those things in order to even feel half full.
I know. I would like to announce that actually the grandsons left last Saturday, and we got a phone call from ShopRite in Hudson.
Where are you? I know. And yours are, those guys are little.
Yes, and they were little.
Yeah.
Ate us out of house and home.
I know. But the whole lunch thing, and also when you consider, I don't know what the quality of meals are in Catskill, but I know from my own experience with my kids that it really leaves a lot to be desired. I've always said that if they change the menu in schools, behavior issues, probably 2/3 of the behavior issues in the afternoon would disappear.
Are they still doing the high sugar?
Yeah, a lot of, a lot of brown food.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's hard to find
fructose.
Yeah, hard to find anything raw.
Yeah, I sound so sophisticated now, and if it wasn't for my wife, I would have no idea.
That's right, but it's good. It's good. It makes you think. And we've had Joan Hunt from Greater Hudson Promise Neighborhood on here several times.
Yes.
Last time she was here, she told us that the surveys were coming out, which is really the primary focus of this project. They have a planning grant that is to facilitate data collection, actually looking at the community, doing an extensive review and survey and determining needs in order to put together a proposal that may lead to an implementation grant at some point down the line. The feds released the RFP on that grant earlier than anticipated, so Hudson will be sitting it out until the next round at least. But they've spent the better part of the first year sort of socializing and getting to know people, making themselves known in the community, and now this is the core aspect of the work. And that's those surveys. I know in Hudson were out this weekend. It is an extensive document. It's 10 pages long, has three parts, and they ask a whole series of questions, which depending on your point of view are extensive and focused or invasive.
Uh-huh, yes.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Right.
There is a great deal of material here for people to go through. Things from, let's see, I can go through some of the topics. Questions about neighborhoods, how you feel about your neighborhoods, what you think about your neighborhood. Questions for early childhood that are focused on, you know, kids up to 8 years old. Your access to health care. And educational level for your children, your demographic information, your ethnic background. It's very long. So.
And this was the one that the people are actually going to people's homes with?
That's right.
Well, then, so they must be sitting with the people for a very long time.
Well, I don't know that they're waiting for them. It's not like the census where they do the short form and they come around and they fill it out. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to do it right there on the spot, which I think is...
Yeah, most people would probably
most
say.
Most people would say no. They no. leave it, and then I think they're supposed to come back and pick it up. I noticed there are a lot of postcards around my neighborhood on the north side of Hudson where they've called, and nobody's been there.
Okay.
So I have no idea at this point what they're... you know, how many people they've actually seen. But we can get Joan on in
yeah,
maybe a couple
we must
of
have
weeks
Joan back on again. And
she can tell so us how it's going.
Bring us up to date.
Yeah. And the last thing I had was I have a son who is entering his senior year of high school. And in the past 2 weeks, I have received two calls, one from the Army, the other from the Marines, on my cell phone, asking about my son, asking to speak to my son. And I didn't have this with my older son. They were not, and actually the Army recruiter who called yesterday while I was here at work, I asked him, I said, where did you get my phone number? And he said, sort of sheepishly, the school. And it's kind of interesting. I'm curious to know if there are any other parents out there, Hudson or anywhere else, if you've had the same experience in the last couple of weeks. I will personally disclose that I signed the form saying, please do not divulge the personal information, my son's personal information, to recruiters. But we're kind of in a gray period, and mm-hmm. because I signed that form last year, but I haven't signed the form for this year yet. So, yeah,
I'm surprised. I actually thought that they got the information from the from the registration when you have to register.
No, actually,
but they didn't get it from that. They actually called the school, and the school provided them with basically a sales list.
Well, that's right. And see, I don't think what most people don't understand is that. That was a provision of No Child Left Behind. That material, that basic information on each child be made available to recruiters. And what they do is they group it with colleges. So you get this form that says, you know, you do or do not have permission to disclose mm-hmm. personal identifying information to Armed Forces / college recruiters. And what I always do is I cross out the Army recruiters, and I say you can give the information to colleges, but not to the Army. But that is a provision, and that's why you get that form at the beginning of every year. The default is they will give that information to them unless you tell them otherwise.
Well, it'd be interesting to know from our listening audience if any other parents such as you have seniors in high school
mm-hmm.
and have they received the telemarketing call.
That's right. Well, and from Uncle Sam.
From the United States Army. Because back in my day, they didn't ask you.
Right. Different time, different circumstances.
No one made a pleasant phone call and said, would you like?
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing is this is a message to the Navy. We're still waiting your call. The Army has. The Marines have called. Now we're waiting for the Navy.
The Navy doesn't call. The Air Force doesn't call. And the Coast Guard does not call. They don't have to.
Yeah, so that's unusual to see recruiters walking State Street.
Oh yeah, sure.
Full uniform.
Absolutely.
This is the first phone call I've gotten.
Uncle Sam wants you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless your mother gets in the way.
Yeah. Well, you know, I handed when the Marines called, I was at home, so I handed the phone to my son. He talked to them. The Army guy, I took his number.
Oh, that's sweet. So, Lynn Slonick are closing with a warning slash advisement slash don't you dare talk to my son.
Well, not exactly. No, I'm curious. I'm more curious to know if other people have gotten these calls.
We're gonna. You know what? We're gonna find out.
Okay.
Okay. So thank you, Lynn, once again.
You're welcome.
You've done it. You've done it again.
Wasted another half hour. No.